Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 8:18 a.m. and that is Pacific Summer Time. And I'm heading off to Japan this early this afternoon, and I'm rather looking forward to a couple of days in a different environment. But also that I've been quite bullish about Japan, and I want to get a much greater feel for how things are looking on the ground, and particularly outside of Tokyo. And this is a rather interesting day in stock markets, where, for example, we see that the second section has come right back down to the region of the trend mean, and then it bounced. And it was only up 28 points on the day by the close. But when we look at that on a daily basis, it had initially gapped lower and then finished up on the day. So there was definitely at least some bargain hunting going on in the middle of the day in the Japanese smaller cap sector. And it was a pretty similar story for the Nikkei, which was well off its lows. Now, the Nikkei has got more work to do. It has certainly underperformed. But that 21,000 level is a bit of a big level, and if it can push back above that, well then we'd be talking about a failed downside break. Now, the Topix Banks Index has been underperforming the Nikkei, but it is now back to the region of the lows that were seen back in 2017. It has certainly it has failed to sustain that break above 200. It came right back down to test the lower side of the range. This is the first area of potential support, and we're starting to see evidence of support just beginning to come back in. So I think obviously international markets are probably going to take their cue from what's going on Wall Street, but so far Wall Street has bounced. But the bounce on Wall Street is, I think, and I will look at a number of those shares in a moment, and what this rotation that we've seen, where the shares of semiconductor companies and those that have adopted subscription models over the last few years are still continuing to be favored, whereas Facebook has really taken it on the chin again in here today. Now, one of the other points that was relevant today was in China. So, for example, the Chinese market has bounced as well. And when we look at this index, it had pulled back very sharply at the end of last week. And now we're starting to see at least some steadying in the region of that early February low. But China's got some work to do. And we can see that very clearly, that that was the largest pullback we've seen in 2 years in February. Now it's encountered resistance in the region of the trend mean. And yes, it is oversold in the short term, so there is the potential for a bounce. But more than most markets, China has got a lot of work to do here, because this is a major trend inconsistency. The uptrend from that low in 2016 was largely manufactured by the authorities. And now with a certain amount of uncertainty in the aftermath of the People's Congress, with single party rule transforming into single person rule, well, we're at a juncture here where I think people can be asking some legitimate questions about the security of investing in China. So it's definitely has some work to do, both in terms of repairing the consistency of the trend and also investor sentiment towards the economy. The other big piece of news was the launch of the futures contract in oil in Shanghai today. The oil price has got right up to $70. And it has been rather racing to get there over the course of the last few days, and not least because we have had, it's been the commodity sector that has benefited from this risk-off environment. And because people are not buying bonds because of the rather enormous supply that is scheduled for this year, then when people are looking for a safe haven asset, if they can't buy bonds, then what do they buy? Well, at least this week, or at least, sorry, excuse me, last week, what we have evidence of is that it was oil and gold is what they were buying. Well, what's interesting about the Chinese oil contract is that it is denominated in yuan, and China is the world's largest importer of oil. The vast majority of oil contracts globally are issued by producers of oil. And Brent crude is the outlier because obviously the UK had been an exporter of oil and is now an importer, but yet Brent is still a significant and perhaps the most significant international benchmark. Well, the only way that China could launch its oil contract was to back it with gold. And quite whether anyone is going to take delivery of gold in lieu of oil remains very much open to question. But what it does is it creates a further link in terms of the in the minds of investors between oil and gold. And gold prices were up an additional $7.75 so far today. Now they're coming back up towards this $1,360 area, and that represents the upper side of the range. So when we look at this on the longer term chart, we can see very clearly that gold has got this saucering pattern. And that's generally consistent with accumulation. And then we have the progression of higher reaction lows that have been evident particularly since the beginning of 2017. And now it's finding support in the region of the trend mean. So even within the range, it's becoming more consistent. And when we look at the ETF holdings of gold, then they've been breaking out. So I think the most interesting thing about this chart is that ETF holdings surged higher in 2016 and then went sideways. That despite the rather profound volatility we've had in oil prices since 2016, that ETF investors were pretty steadfast in their support for the gold market, and now it is pushing on to new highs, suggesting that they're putting more money in. And ETF holdings of gold are a significant source of demand for the yellow metal. When we look at the platinum price, it's currently around $954. That's one of the largest discounts to the gold price in history. And when we look at the range, we can see two things. The first is that it's really quite inert relative to the kind of volatility that we can see from the history of platinum. But then we look at the news flow, and there's been all of this negative commentary with regard to the diesel market and collapsing demand for diesel cars. And the primary use for platinum is as a catalytic converter in those diesel cars. So, that being the case, one might have expected prices to go lower. But if you run the numbers, and considering the fact that platinum is generally sold at 95% pure, whereas jewelry for gold is usually at 3/4 pure or 18 carat, and then you look at the discount and the relative densities of the two metals, that you could remake any piece of gold jewelry today and it would look exactly the same in platinum and it would cost less. Or at least it should cost less if you were simply looking at the spot value of the metal. Well, that's an incredibly unusual set of circumstances. There is no set of circumstances in, at least in my lifetime that I can remember, where platinum has been able to trade below the price of gold in the jewelry market. And that represents a potential tailwind for the metal. So it's right in the middle of the range. It's at $950, and if it can bounce from this area, well, then that will, I think, begin to get people to think that the $1,000 level isn't going to permanently represent an area of resistance. Now, then, when we look at the Indian market, which has been pulling back, well, it was pulled all the way back to 10,000, and then we get the clearest upward dynamic we've seen since the beginning of February. So this also now coincides with the region of the trend mean, and we're starting to get the first evidence of support coming back in for the Indian market. And most particularly when we look at the banking sector, then it has also bounced, but it has more work to do. It definitely needs to push back above the trend mean to confirm more than short-term steadying in here right now. Now, when we look at the Euro Stoxx index, it's in negative territory. So that's quite different to what we're seeing in Asia, where we had bounces pretty much across the board. And part of the reason why those European stocks are in negative territory is because the euro is rather sharply higher. So There is the potential here that we are approaching the end of the euro's range below 125. It's been very consistent that we had a very clearly defined base formation. We had a first step above the base that lasted for approximately 6 months. Then we had a breakout and a very orderly consolidation below that psychological 125 area. And now it's firming within the range. There is the potential that if we go back and just think about some of the mores from the chart seminar, a consistent trend is a trend in motion, and this is still a trend in motion. That as long as it is holding the region of 120, then this can be considered a reasonably consistent advance. And so far, this range has been comparatively inert relative to what has been a rather has been a chart that has been characterized by volatility for over a decade, and it does look like we're going to see additional upside for the euro, and that's really not great news for a number of those European indices. And the Italian index is right in the region of the trend mean, and it did bounce rather well 3 weeks ago, but there is the real prospect that the five-star movement will be entering government. And when we look at it over the lengthy medium term, the index has been ranging below 25,000, and we're at the upper side of the range, and now testing the region of the trend mean, and that advance up from the middle of 2016 has lost momentum. So this is a rather key moment here for the Italian market, and the strength of the euro for a market that is heavily reliant on exports to the USA is not especially good news. Then the pound is also firm in here. It's up over a cent against the dollar. So again, this is a very consistent advance. We had the accelerated decline in 2016, and then we had a period of support building, which was characterized by a progression of higher reaction lows, and now we've had a series of ranges one above another, and it has now unwound just about all of the decline that it put in following the Brexit negotiations, or excuse me, the Brexit referendum. There is an increasing argument from certain segments of the UK political spectrum that there should be an additional referendum. And Tony Blair was in there campaigning for that in here today. This unfolding issue with Cambridge Analytica is also something that could be turned to provoke an additional referendum. So every time it has looked like the UK will remain closer to the EU, the pound has rallied, and it continues to rally in here right now. When we look at it versus the euro, then this has been about the best barometer we've had for the outlook for the Brexit negotiations. It still remains range bound, and we've had a fair bit of volatility over the last three sessions, but it is holding this 114 level, and it spent more time above 114 now than it has done at any time since June of last year. So this is a rather interesting point now for the pound versus the euro. There is the possibility that the pound could be in the process of breaking upwards, and unless it comes back below 114, I think that that is the most logical conclusion. Now, when we look at the Nasdaq today, then we can see that Microsoft, for example, is up 5%. Microsoft is one of those companies that has adopted a subscription model. Then if we look at Adobe, which is the sixth best performer, again, it's a subscription model business. Take-Two Interactive is a games manufacturer and has a lot of downloadable content, so that is also a subscription-oriented business. Then if we look at the other side of the ledger, Facebook is down 6% and Tesla is down 2.75%. Tesla is now below $300. But let's first look at Facebook. So Facebook has now pulled back very violently. There is the potential that the FTC is going to levy fines against it or is going to regulate it. And this is a significant trend of deterioration. When we think about it in those terms, this is the biggest pullback that Facebook has had since at least 2012. And this is also a major trend inconsistency because it has pulled back now for well below the trend mean. Now, it is already down almost 25% off the peak. And there is the possibility that we do get a bounce. And then the question from that bounce will be the extent to which it can find or it can push back above the trend mean. But this is a massive reaction against the prevailing uptrend. It's a type 2 topping characteristic. Type 2 topping characteristics are often followed by periods of ranging. So there is no evidence that this decline is over, and it could continue to move lower. But the most likely scenario is that we are going to get some kind of bounce at some point, either this week or next, and then it will likely encounter resistance around 170. But what it does suggest is that the peak at 195 is at least a medium-term peak, and we could be in for months, if not years, of ranging for Facebook. Well, Tesla has been at a rather difficult environment now for the last few months because they just simply have not been able to get their production on track. One of the things I was highlighting most acutely in the Friday audio was the quantity of strikes that are open at $300. And it doesn't matter what maturity you look at for those options, there are a lot of people who are seeing their put options moving into the money today on Tesla. And generally speaking, when people see their short positions moving into the money, they increase them. So this is a key moment for Tesla. It is going to have to bounce and bounce quick if it is going to register a failed downside break. And something that I've highlighted on numerous occasions is that Tesla is a B-rated credit. Rwanda is a B-rated credit. In fact, Rwanda is a B-plus rated credit. So when you think about it in those terms, that is the kind of risk that Tesla represents. The Uber killing a pedestrian is an issue for self-driving technology. Tesla has obviously been at the forefront of pioneering that self-driving technology, and this represents a bit of an uncertainty. So we also can look at the volatility of the share, and Tesla has been characterized by volatility. This does not look like good news. So there is the potential here that if in the absence of a bounce quickly, that we're going to see significantly lower levels tested by Tesla. And this does have a knock-on effect for high yield, because the high yield bond index has been largely inert, but it does look like it is going to break out. And it isn't generally when you get the high yield sector breaking out that you get an imminent sign of trouble for the stock market. It usually has to trend higher for a while, but it does look like it is going to start trending higher. That when you look at these junk bond indices, they're not looking very benign. That the JNK or the high yield bond ETF is rolling over, and it has a lot of work to do to really begin to question that we're not going to see lower levels. One of the other interesting things, of course, is that despite the fact that we had a bounce on both oil and gold, treasuries did or treasury yields did not pull back to any real measurable extent. They are continuing to hold this 2.8% level, and I think that is a testament to just how much additional demand there is out there. Now, when we look at the Dow Jones, for example, it gapped higher this morning, and so far it has been able to hold the advance. Neither Facebook nor Tesla are constituents of that index, but it has been underperforming primarily because of Boeing, which had accelerated higher and continues to look like it is in a process of mean reversion. And then the other obviously big constituents of just about all indices is Apple. Although it isn't a very big constituent of the Dow Jones, it is now right back in the region of the trend mean. And this is a potential area of support. But at the same time, when we look at the fact that it pulled back very violently in February, the chances are that we are in for some additional volatility. That the what it looks to me as if is that we had a very sharp pullback last week, and there is now potential for some steadying, but that there's a lot of people are uncertain right now. And when you have the VIX index at 24 and has clearly bounced from the region of the trend mean, that the chances are that we are going to have some additional volatility, and that if these lows are going to hold, well then we're going to need clear upper dynamics to begin to help investor confidence to return. But what we're also starting to see is a clear, I think, differentiation and I think rotation out of the fangs and into the kinds of companies that still offer growth but also have reliable cash flows. And certainly the subscription model businesses fit into that particular category. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I wish all the best to all of you.